You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CB Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app. Giving Texas until about this time tomorrow to respond to the Fed's demand to remove the big ball-shaped buoys strung together with barbed wire in the Rio Grande River aimed at stopping swimming migrants. Former Assistant U.S. Attorney Evan Gottlob says the feds...
They run the waters, not the states. So they do have a valid lawsuit under the statute.
Texas Governor Abbott says the state's action is legal. These protesters in streets of Tel Aviv support passing a bill tomorrow that's caused 29 weeks of demonstrations. A bill that would strip the Israeli Supreme Court of powers to declare actions of lawmakers of the executive branch illegal. Supporters say the court has too much power. Opponents fear a move toward authoritarian rule. Supporting the bill, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, who is recovering in a hospital after a surgery to put in a pacemaker. This is ABC News. A mystery and a worry about this case involving North Korea. ABC's Dave Packer.
Pyongyang still mum on the whereabouts of Private Travis King, who crossed into North Korea earlier this week. Secretary of State Blinken saying officials are very concerned about his well-being, and when asked if King might be tortured, Blinken said that based on what they've seen in the past and based on the way North Korea has treated those it detains, that it's a concern.
Another expert take on the economy by a business association this week and why it's different from ABC's Daria Albinger.
The Business Conditions Survey takes into account all the aspects of working, from material costs to hiring. The Fed meets on Tuesday. By the time it adjourns Wednesday, it could announce it's raising interest rates again after pausing last month as it tries to bring inflation down to the 2% target.
Tesla recalling nearly 16,000 electric cars. Some front row seat belts may not have been reconnected properly after they were repaired after a previous recall. Letters going out to the car owners. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
If you're hankering for a hunk of Wisconsin-grown radio, you've come to the right place. This is Extra Sharp Weekends on Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup. Starting at 6 a.m., The Mayor and Mino. Then at 8, The Earl Ingram Show. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show. On 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. A lot of people live in places in Wisconsin not served by a dentist. Mike Moan spoke with some people who say licensed dental therapists could close the gap.
The Kaiser Family Foundation says the U.S. needs to add nearly 12,000 dentists to close gaps in shortage areas. Wisconsin has 173 areas under that designation, leaving small-town residents and marginalized populations without options to keep their teeth healthy. Matt Crispine of the Children's Health Alliance of Wisconsin says the state has done a good job in building up certain types of care in underserved areas, but there are limitations.
We take portable equipment out into communities and provide a considerable amount of preventive care in about 1,100 schools across the state. Unfortunately, about 40% of those kids that we see in schools need follow-up care, so fillings, extractions.
Crispine says coordinating that follow-up care is often challenging. He hopes Wisconsin joins the list of states to approve a licensing program for dental therapists. Supporters say they do a lot of the same types of work as dentists, including restorative care, but their employment costs are more manageable. The American Dental Association opposes the idea, citing safety concerns. But backers say these programs provide extensive training. Dr. Frank Catalanato of the National Coalition of Dentists for Health Equity says dental therapists have proven effective in states like Minnesota, suggesting they can help families elsewhere who have to travel great lengths for oral care.
Now, mom or dad doesn't have to take
4 hours of time off from work at their hourly job to take the kid to the dentist.
Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Living happily ever after isn't always a reality. If you're over 50 and are considering divorce, attorney Andrea Gage with the Everson Law Firm can provide the guidance you need. Andrea focuses on silver divorces, the kind that get more complicated over time and present unique challenges. A family, multiple properties, significant assets. Andrea and the team at Everson Law have the experience to protect your interests. Call Everson Law to set up an appointment with Andrea today. It's never too late to be happy. Everson Law, 920-435-3734. The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Cripescast. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens, and we are brought to you by Jolly Good Soda. Hey, folks, welcome back to another episode of the Cripescast. This week, my guest is comedian Rory Scovel. He is so funny. He's coming into Milwaukee and a bunch of dates around the Midwest coming into Milwaukee soon. Check it out. Ticket links and all that stuff. Colleen Maraca, what EP of the Cripescast. Colleen, what day is Rory coming to Milwaukee?
Rory's coming to Milwaukee. He's coming to the Turner Hall Ballroom July 21st. Tickets are at roryscovel.com. He's also got some Minneapolis dates around then, Chicago. So yeah, if you're not specifically in the Milwaukee area, like it's the perfect time. It's right in the summer. That's when you ought to be in the Midwest. So he's going to be, long story short, he's going to be in the Midwest. Yeah. He's coming here the 21st.
He's so funny too. I mean, he's working, he's tightening up his next hour. So it's going to be a real treat to go see him. Anyway, we'll chit chat with him in a minute.
You guys also went down like a Catholic church rabbit hole of all.
And let me say this off the top. Because I grew up Catholic, he grew up Catholic. And there's a lot of great things about, you know, the Catholic faith and all this and that. And, you know, a lot of people get a lot of good out of it. And I think you certainly can. But I think you also have to acknowledge that the Catholic Church has had some problems, historically speaking, you know, Crusades being one of them. Also, the whole pedophilia aspect. So, you know, you can't just look at the positive aspects of something. And, you know, that church, like any other church, is inherently flawed because you got people involved and people are inherently flawed. So to not acknowledge that is a little disingenuous, but that was a disclaimer. With all that said, it was really cool talking to him just because he is sort of a comedian's comedian, you know. Conan really, I think, gave him an awesome platform, really sending him on his career. And he does so many creative, cool things, an entire, you know, stand-up special, just crowd work. His crowd work and improv is so good. His, you know, straight stand-up is amazing. So, I really like talking to him. And also, you know, we have a lot of similarities. You know, we had the news business. We both come from big families, Catholic families. And it was kind of cool talking about that. What did you like about it, Colleen? Tell me what you liked about my podcast, Colleen. Not fishing for compliments at all, but
this
you know.
Is the affirmation. This is the affirmation hour. this is the only time I'm nice to Charlie is when we're on air.
And you're not even, can I just say, you're not even that, you don't even pretend to be that nice to me on air.
Want to like make a disclaimer that I am normally a nice person, but I think Charlie just brings the worst out of me.
Oh, that's nice of you to say live on air.
I'm kidding.
That's really nice. Anyways, folks, I do want to let you know, if you're looking for an interesting environmental way to clothe yourself, we've got a bunch of merchandise on mandoaugment.com, made in the USA, which means lower carbon footprint, also supports American workers. You can check it out, cripescast.com, click on the merch section, and you can also find us, patreon.com/CharlieBehrens. Two great ways to support the pod. And yeah, with that, should we get right into it?
Also, one other thing.
Yeah.
You guys were talking about tour. We have more tour dates coming up. So just like when people email in or whatever, or message in being like, when are tour dates coming up? We update the KrebsCast website and charliebarons.com pretty much instantaneously as we know tour dates. Also, send us places that we should send Charlie for tour dates. But be checking our tour pages pretty regularly. That's when we will let folks know that you're going specific places.
Excellent. Yeah. And we also do a first look at tour dates, the initial push on the Patreon. So if you want like those initial blip on tickets, check that out too. All right. Well, that's enough promo-y stuff. Should we dive in, Kelly?
Please.
All right. Let's talk to Rory Scovel.
So, yeah, where are you right now? Where's your home at? A specific address and location?
Yep. And here's my social and credit card. I am in Los Angeles. I've been gone for about 2 months in Atlanta. And before that, I was doing the tour. And now I'm back in LA before I start the next leg of this tour.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're coming, I see, to the Turner Hall Ballroom in Milwaukee.
That's right. Yeah.
Have you played that venue before?
I have not. No, I've only played Milwaukee one other time. It was a comedy club. And I think it was probably, 11 plus years ago. So pretty excited to get back.
Was that the club that was below a strip club?
I think so. Yeah. I can't remember what it was called.
Tap and heels. Yeah. Something like that.
It was a long, long time ago. But yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a goofy one. Not a bad initial premise. I mean, I bet you could do a supercut of all the comedians making fun of that aspect of it. You'd probably get right. a nice little video there.
Opening local banter always included the strip club for sure.
Yeah. It's tough to avoid it on that, you know? Yeah.
Right.
I'll go talk to the guy upstairs or something like that. Gal upstairs. I don't know. There's some jokes there. Are you excited to go back on tour? Are you enjoying not?
Yeah, I am excited. I was getting into a pretty good rhythm, and then I was fortunate enough to get cast in a movie that shot in Atlanta, so that kind of took me away from it. And so I'm excited. You know, once I had my rhythm going, that feels like such a comfortable space to be in for stand-up. So I'm excited to like find it again. But I will say, sometimes when you take time off, it's kind of great, because then when you go back to do the hour again, it's changed a little bit. You're out of the repeated script of what all the jokes, you know, like they change because you forget a little bit, you know.
Yeah, because you haven't memorized to a degree, or at least the beats, and then you can live in it a little more and take the moments.
That's
you
right.
know, like, you ever shoot a special, and then I'm sure you probably have, and then you're still doing maybe some of the material because the special hasn't come out, and you're like, damn, that should have been the special.
Yeah. And then you also like, you think of a tag that you're like, that was there the whole time. Or like, for some, this is what I love and hate about it. It's like, to your example, like then like the light bulb goes off and you realize, actually, this joke should have gone after that joke, and I should have gotten rid of that one sentence that no one ever laughed at, but for some reason I kept saying it. And then it's always after the fact. And as frustrating as that is, there is something I still love about that as well, where it's kind of always changing and growing, even when you have to walk away from it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think the next time I do a special, I may like tell myself I'm going to do this special, but no, it's not really the special. I don't think it's going to work, though. I think you need that, like, okay, this is it, to like totally screw yourself mentally. But then that release is when you find a lot of beauty.
I think my goal is at the end of this tour in like November or whatever. We kind of keep finding dates here and there to add, but I'm hoping that all of this repetition of doing it over and over again, that either I do find those sweet gems that you're talking about that kind of appear out of nowhere before we record, or I get so tired of doing this hour that I don't even care.
As we shoot,
I don't know that for us comics that there is a perfect special where you go, and that was me peaking, and that was when I loved it. It's like, no, we usually record when we're so tired of it.
I know.
Or too early, or we do it too early, where it hasn't cooked enough.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then there's always that one show. Like for me, it was like, I think Minneapolis at the State Theater. I'm like, that I should have recorded.
Yeah.
That was it. And no, I didn't do anything. I don't even think I recorded the audio on it, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe that's just it. It's better in my memory, you know, than it actually was. That could be.
You know what I think? I think it's because I think what we do is so with that, because it's a live experience, it's so with that live crowd.
Yeah.
That us recording albums, which is a kind of a different story, but, you know, recording specials, it's kind of not ever going to accurately grab what it is we do, because as soon as those cameras are on and the stakes are raised, we're no longer up there just kind of noodling around with the guitar having fun. We're it's got to be perfect and it's got to be concrete, because when I die, this will still
I know
this will be my legacy. We think so grandeur of ourselves that we think this matters so much, and on nights where you don't have the camera going, you and an audience walk, so like you're saying at the State Theater, you and an audience walk away going, that was the greatest night, that was the greatest show. But yet it wouldn't have been if you would have put four or five cameras up.
That's really it. So the trick then is, you know, we just have to spend all the money that we would make on these shows filming every show, and then we'll have no money but a great show somewhere in there.
Yeah, yeah. And then and then also chop them all together where our clothes are changing, the backdrop is changing.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, Adam Sandler did that on, I forget, like 99% Fresh or whatever.
His last one. Yeah.
Have you ever seen any other comedians do it that way, where you take like clips from different places?
You'd have to have a crazy budget. And so,
because you'd have to film all of them. Yeah.
You'd have to be him and beyond, because you need the crew. You've got to have your director. I can't even imagine what sitting down and cutting that thing must have been like.
I'm
glad he did it. No one else would. You'd have to be his level of fame to get that budget to do it. And if I had that, I don't know that I would want to do that. I think I'd still be like, no, let's not shoot everything.
Because it kind of it can get in the way a little bit. I mean, now guys are bringing camera people out, you know, to every shoot to get those crowd work clips.
Those clips.
Yeah.
And that's really helping our craft. And I've always appreciated that.
I can just feel I'm bathing in the sarcasm right now. How do you truly feel about that? I mean, it's I don't know.
I think all of us as individual artists and employees have to survive. And I think we live in a strange time. And also we work in a strange medium of live entertainment, and we've got to do what we got to do. I think overall, I like posting clips that are jokes that I just don't do anymore. And hopefully that gains me some tickets. Honestly, ticket sales. Hopefully that gets people to come to a
show.
That's
why we're doing
it. But I don't want people showing up assuming, I love crowd work. I like doing that stuff too, but I don't want anybody showing up assuming that is what I do and that's what I want them to actively participate in and inspire and go after, because I really want to do my act and I want to be in control of the show, and I don't want to have to throw people out. I don't have to remind someone a 10th time to stop talking. But I think there's people that go to shows now actively wanting to be in a clip, wanting to be something. Oh yeah, I saw that on their page. That's my voice. That's me in the crowd.
Yeah, and now there's shooting of the crowd. So now there's that further invitation. Apartment. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, have you noticed a distinct change in that in your shows with your audience?
I think because this is a tour. I mean, if I was just doing clubs right now, I might notice that. That might be the case. But I think maybe because it's more these theaters and less clubs, you get less of that. You know, you don't see a lot of clips where people are playing a theater and getting crowd work stuff. And again, like I'm not anti crowd work, but if you post a bunch of clips of just doing crowd work, I think I personally, as an audience member, I would wonder what is the product. And I get it. You don't want to burn material. And that's why I sit here saying everyone's got to do their own thing, because I couldn't tell you what the solution is. You know, I don't know how long you've been doing this. I'm on, I think, 18 or 19 years. I liked it back when this was not a part of our craft. You just wrote your thing and you tried to collect email addresses.
Right, right. Get your list going. Yeah. Give me your email address. I'll give you a free sticker, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Those days are obviously long gone, but I appreciated that when it was like, oh yeah. That, and then you just get up and you do your thing, you play your show, and you don't have to get involved in this other aspect of our craft. I mean, getting up and doing stand up alone, you know, the amount of people that say, I don't know how you can do it, even though you know how you can do it. And it's not as crazy as people's interpretation of it is. But still, a lot of people don't want to publicly speak under any circumstances. And yet we are able to get up there and do it. And it is still a hard thing to do, to entertain people. And it'd be captivating and interesting for anywhere from 20 to 60 minutes. That is a tough thing to do, and to craft an act that can accomplish it. Then on top of it, it's like, now also be your own web designer and be your own clip maker and be your own. And you know, look at us. I mean, I have a podcast. You've got a podcast. We're having to like find these other outlets of promoting ourselves. In these these other fields.
Five different jobs, six different jobs. Do you have a team helping you out? Or are you doing all this kind of?
For helping me out with clips, I have a friend, Chad, who was doing stuff for Todd Glass, and now he started mining clips for me and posting Instagram and TikTok and YouTube and all the various outlets of trying to get people aware of you. But I'd say it's like basically him doing it. I have a friend, Garrett, who redid my website.
Shout out to Garrett. Shout out
Garrett,
Chad.
Garrett Boatman, Chad Maxwell. But yeah, I don't know. It's all confusing me because I'm pretty lazy in general. I like getting on stage and doing stand up and having that be my job. Let me create the product. And if someone's like, this is what we should do with the product, well, then I'm all ears and I'm open to someone doing it. I just don't want to be the one to do it because I just want to focus on what we do, which... And these are the things I enjoy. I like getting on stage and I like doing my podcast. I love those things.
Yeah. Because the other aspect, the editing, all that puts you in such a different headspace and it burns you out quick, I think.
Yeah. It's like trying to make a movie and deciding you're going to be the head of every department. It's like, right. You can't do wardrobe. You can't do makeup and hair and set design. You just do the thing you did, which is write it or direct it or act in it. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's too much.
Yeah. It is a lot. You have some of the, I mean, craziest crowd work though. I didn't see this. I think I heard this a little while ago. So if I get this story wrong, excuse me, but you were doing a show maybe in New York or something and you're doing crowd work and you just walked out of the club and brought like your mic was still on so they could still hear you. And then you right. talked to like a taxi driver or something and brought him back on stage.
I did that in San Diego.
Okay.
I was down there doing Conan's, you know, he does Conan Con, like he does.
Oh yeah. During
the thing. Yeah. During Comic-Con.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we were down there and at the time I was doing my fully improvised hour type shows and they asked if I wanted to do it. So I was in a venue where the door off the stage really went right into the street and there was a like a limo driver, but now it's not limos. It's like these nice black SUVs. It was like a driver.
Yeah.
And he was just standing there and for some reason was willing to come back on stage. And I gave him a microphone and just kind of chatted with him and interviewed him. But it was funny because he was waiting on someone who was at my show without that person to be like leaving. They were leaving early.
Oh, that's hilarious.
You know, when you're improvising an hour, you're like, oh, I need all the wood possible to keep feeding the fire. So as soon as that was outed, like that gave me a direction to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love that. That working was all hinged on that guy being down to play. And obviously, like, he was super chill too.
So when you take like a risk like that, I mean, that's the high. And you've got to probably, I would imagine, have an equal low. Do you have like something where you tried going big and it just bombed horrendously?
Nothing comes to mind. I mean, and it's probably because our brains protect us. So all those times I bombed, my brain's like, delete that, delete it. Only remember the good. I don't know that there was any time where I tried to go super big with something and it didn't pan out to be anything, because I'm always very cautious. Like, if that guy would have come on stage and his vibe would have been strange, I probably would have, you know, I waited a second before I gave him a mic to participate. Okay. You know what I mean? You're trying to read you're trying to read the defense a little bit before you throw the ball. So I haven't run into taking big swings and then it not pan out. I've taken big swings where, I have one example that was kind of a tough recovery. I was performing in Tampa Bay. I think it was the Improv, and someone got up to go to the bathroom. And so I got a second microphone. I put my microphone on the stage, and I've done this before, and I think it's really funny, but I put the microphone on stage and then I went and hid with another microphone, and I told the audience to pretend like they can still see me on stage. So when that person comes back, they're like, what are we looking at? Maybe it looks weird to them. And that person was leaving. They never came back.
Oh, really?
They weren't going after. They were done with the show. All of my stories involve people leaving early. They were leaving the show. And so eventually, after 5 minutes, I just had to get back on stage with an entire audience being like, why did we do what? What in the f- was that? And then, you know, going straight to material to be like, all right, let's see if I have any A cards and try to build some momentum again.
Well, that's
I also
fun.
Stupidly did it towards the end of the show, too. So, you know what I mean?
That's definitely a middle portion, you know, where you can, they're either clearly mad and leaving. There's not really mistaking the bathroom for jetting out of there early to beat the rush of traffic in Tampa, beat those chickens. They got so many wild chickens down there.
Yeah. You know, Tampa's a strange, that? Florida's a strange state.
It is general. A strange, strange state. Yeah. It's, it's crazy, man. And also, like, I was talking to some people, it got leveled by the, hurricane and like Fort Myers, I think. They're like, yeah, it's all leveled. I'm like, so are people going to rebuild there? They're like, oh yeah, that's a hot real estate market. I'm like, wow, we are just dumb people in general. You know, we are just, you know, like
it's the best place to live for till the next hurricane.
You're right. Right. Which will be any day now, you know?
Yeah.
It's nuts. I don't know. I don't know what that's about. Hottest day of the year ever recorded a couple days ago. Do you know that
in Florida or what?
Everywhere. Everywhere. Around.
Oh, overall records were broken.
Yeah. 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 That's interesting. Surprising. Yeah. Surprising to you?
Not surprising, eternally terrifying. I go down that road of politics and environmental concern and live in that eternal question mark of, well, where, outside of myself doing the best I can to not be trying to not endanger the environment, what can we do? Because I think we're learning more and more, it's becoming more and more difficult to convince anyone of any slight change that might be positively affecting anything. And so you kind of just are like, all right, well, I think about my own health. I just go, all right, you know what? If someone eats meat and they go, it's fine, eat a ton of meat. And then someone says, eat less meat, it's better for your body. And then someone says, don't eat any meat at all. It's really bad for the environment. I live in that space of going, well, I don't need anyone to convince me that eating a lot of meat is unhealthy. That should be a logical thing. Now, the road of no meat or less meat, that's do what you want. I fully believe our agriculture is destroying I think it is the main contributing factor of our climate issues. But for me personally, who was raised on meat, I'm not sitting here 100% not eating meat as someone aware of the problem. So with me being in that mind frame, I don't know how you convince someone who couldn't even fathom these ideas as being, you know, as changing positively towards any kind of change. I don't know. That was a confusing sentence. But I think
no, I get what you're saying. If you yourself, knowing everything, can't be fully on board with it, how can you expect to commit someone whose entire livelihood depends on that kind of situation?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm kind of there with you on that. Yeah, and then the interesting thing is it's possible that all this AI stuff can figure out how to, you know, sequester carbon more efficiently than we can. And then the question is, you know, do we all, you know, is it climate change that takes care of humanity, or is it AI, you know, that takes care of humanity. And by takes care, I mean
takes kills.
Goner. Yep. Yeah, they're a no-go anymore, you know.
Yeah,
they're gone.
You know, I the AI thing is interesting because it there is this element of hope and this element of fear at the same time, because and the fear is justified, but it does also come from a place of fictional storytelling where all we've ever told ourselves is that robots are not our friends and intelligent, you know, non-life forms, non-living entities will want to kill us. We've been told that. And so Terminator. We believe that. And it doesn't mean, exactly. And it doesn't mean we're wrong. And, you know, I think it's right to be fearful of anything, like, until you really understand what it is. But we never kind of go down the road of, like, is there any percentage of something positive to gain from this, from something that is going to be smarter than us? Do we have to assume that it will be evil? Do we have to assume that it will learn that we are the problem? Or will it develop and just actually want to help us and be motivated to help us? I know this is a very broad statement because we can't fully identify what all things AI truly is or can be. But I wonder, can we benefit from it ultimately in a coexist kind of way? Can AI be the thing that goes, you know, because humans trying to create peace with humans doesn't work.
Well, I mean, but, yet,
and I always wonder, you know, if aliens came down from space, would that be the thing that gets everybody on Earth going, you know, oh, we're all on the same team because we actually need another thing.
Right. We need a common enemy.
Can AI be our moderator that says, hey, you guys need to shut up and listen. You can survive on this planet, but you need to do these things. And then we all just agree that's right or fake news. I read the funniest news thing today is that Republicans are now wanting to block a bill to extinguish disinformation on social media. And they are the political party that hypes how fake the news is. They constantly talk about fake news, and now they don't want to this disinformation. It's
wait. I don't understand this. They this is federal. This is Congress.
Yeah. So I don't know the details of it because I was reading about it. By the way, if anyone listening to this, I get a lot of information from Heather Cox Richardson, which I think is a great outlet for not just current day information, but actual just historical, like, where does, you know, obviously easy one, where does 4th of July come from? But like details of like stories where you go, oh, that's an interesting tidbit from history I didn't know about, you know.
Yeah.
X. But also Judd at Popular Information, and everything should be read with a grain of salt, but I read both of those things. But yesterday Trump appointed Judge Terry A. Dowdy of the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Louisiana issued a preliminary injunction saying the First Amendment prevents the government from trying to stop the spread of disinformation.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, freedom of speech, I guess, right? So
Yes.
And I historically speaking, I suppose yellow journalism, you know, that's kind of what that was. So yeah, I mean it does. That doesn't mean that's gonna make us any better. You know, that's
not.
That's an interesting hill to go up and die on. You know,
I just thought it was funny because it's like, hey, that's the it's everyone's First Amendment right to be able to publish fake news is like basically what highlights.
Right. Yeah.
You hate fake news, but now here's the thing going, hey, let's get rid of fake news. You're like, whoa, that's not, you can't get rid of fake news. That's not fair.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup.
4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude.
6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show
on WGBW.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. More than a big flap, a legal battle possible. The Justice Department giving Texas until about this time tomorrow to respond to the Fed's demand to remove the big ball-shaped buoys strung together with barbed wire in the Rio Grande River, aimed at stopping swimming migrants. Former Assistant U.S. Attorney Evan Gottlob says the feds,
they run
the waters, not the states. So they do have a valid lawsuit under the statute.
Texas Governor Abbott says the state's action is legal. These protesters in streets of Tel Aviv support passing a bill tomorrow that's caused 29 weeks of demonstrations. A bill that would strip the Israeli Supreme Court of powers to declare actions of lawmakers of the executive branch illegal. Supporters say the court has too much power. Opponents fear a move toward authoritarian rule. Supporting the bill, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, who is recovering in a hospital after a surgery to put in a pacemaker. This is ABC News.
Living happily ever after isn't always a reality. If you're over 50 and are considering divorce, attorney Andrea Gage with the Everson Law Firm can provide the guidance you need. Andrea focuses on silver divorces, the kind that get more complicated over time and present unique challenges. A family, multiple properties, significant assets. Andrea and the team at Everson Law have the experience to protect your interests. Call Everson Law to set up an appointment with Andrea today. It's never too late to be happy. Everson Law, 920-435-3734. The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
This is EAA Air Venture Airwaves,
your all-access pass to the world's greatest aviation celebration.
Here's Terry Barr.
There are few events bringing people together from 80 different countries, but it's happening right now at the Experimental Aircraft Association's EAA Air Venture in Oshkosh.
You always come for the airplanes, but then you come back for the people.
Dick Napinski's worked at EAA for more than 30 years, and despite its growth from hosting 150 to 600,000 people, he calls this a special event for the area.
They fly in from across the country and around the world to be here. There is a culture here with Air Venture that it has grown organically over 70 years.
It's enough growth. Oshkosh is considered the busiest airport in the world during the week of the EAA fly-in. For Civic Media's EAA Air Venture Airwaves, I'm Terry Barr. Hear more of my interview with Dick at civicmedia.us.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup. Starting at 6 a.m., The Mayor and Mino. Then at 8, The Earl Ingram Show. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show.
On 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hey folks, I'm Charlie Behrens, and this is the Cripes Cast. You are listening to my conversation with comedian Rory Scovill.
Speaking of news, you were a newsman back in the day, weren't you?
Right. Yeah, I worked at a local news station in Spartanburg, South Carolina.
Oh, I was doing Spartanburg
camera.
Nice.
Yeah. Camera guy. So I had headphones on that were slightly bigger than these. And just framing up shots, getting the anchors.
Oh, you were an in-studio guy. Did you ever go out and about or just in studio?
The only time I went out and about was to try to get footage of as many Friday night high school football games as possible. So you'd go with, there'd be two of you, you'd go as a team. And there in the upstate, there are so many high schools and there's so many games. And I think News Channel 7 prided itself on somehow collecting a significant amount of highlights. Like that was their claim to fame. So we like really hustled. So if you and I were on a team, one of us would drive feverishly to a game. You would jump out and you'd try to get one complete pass, a pan to the scoreboard, you know, because by the time we report the results of the games are over because it's 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
But the games are always at like 8 p.m. So a bunch of different groups of two. Sometimes you'd go by yourself, whatever, spread people out, and you'd have five high school games you're trying to go get footage of, and you get your standard stuff like, there's the cheerleaders, there's the crowd, there's a play, there's the coach Matt, there's the scoreboard, and we're off to the next. And then someone would quickly cut all that together, and Pete Yannity would sit there, and while all those are playing, the clips are playing, everyone in the studio, we're sitting on the stage because you're not getting any footage of the actual anchor, and we're just watching the screen, which keeps showing highlights while we hear him talk about the scores in the game.
you're like,
that was a long story you didn't ask for at all.
No, it's like you're like Nightcrawler for football.
Yes, that is a perfect description. That's exactly right.
I used to do news too. I did news in Dallas. I was like an anchor kind of. Well, they wanted to do like comedy news, like it was called Nightcap, a different kind of news. And then after being there for like 3 months, they're like, all right, we tried this. Let's go back to the traditional stuff. And then shortly right. after that, I lost my job. But it's such a weird thing, local news, and kind of how it's, you know, I think it can be really impactful, but the way they tend to do it, you know, is often not super. And I don't want to generalize all news stations, but like TV news, such a tough thing to do, like actual journalism. And you kind of have a lot of constraints in that.
A lot of constraints. And also, even now, by today's standards of how people, how sensationalized news is, and now news is opinion, talking heads. It's more of a form of entertainment disguised as news.
Yeah,
it has to make it even harder for local news that just wants to tell you that this guy Barry is opening a new milkshake store on Main Street, and here's him.
those are the best ones too, you know, those that, but yeah, you got like these bigger like Sinclair or whatever buying up a bunch of stations, and then, you know, that's when you get those everyone saying the same script over and over again.
Exactly. Yes.
It's a little disheartening, but speaking of Spartanburg, you're from Greenville. I lived in Greenville for like a year and a half.
When?
I lived there 2011 to like 2013, okay. Somewhere around there.
What took you there?
I'm so glad you asked. It was this thing called 1 Minute News. And okay. There's, do you know Doug Greenlaw at all? Does that name ring a bell? No. Oh, you don't know the Greenlaws down there. Okay. He worked for MTV, and then he started this this like YouTube news channel. So I worked there for like a year and a half. That was my first like on camera position. But yeah, I had a place, I forget, over in one of those old mills that they turned into like condos or whatever.
Off Augusta, off Augusta Road, like Pleasantburg.
I think. Somewhere. I kind of forget the streets, but those sound really familiar. You know?
Yeah, there's I know what you're talking about.
There's a bike path that kind of goes along the river, that sort of thing. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
Greenville's a nice town. Do you like it?
I do like it. It has changed dramatically over the past 20 years since I've been in that area, and. Yeah, it's beautiful. It's a really great city. It has become strangely so many condos that are very expensive, and I have always wondered who lives in these condos that you have to purchase, because the purchase price of those condos is the same as going 5 minutes away and buying actual land and a house.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I don't know the main industry there, but there must be a hospital. That seems like a hospital kind of salary type thing, you know?
It's crazy. Truly it's awesome. But I do think they are going down a road of becoming so many condos. And I don't know anything about the history of cities and their evolution. I mean, maybe that's what all cities are, and it's just not as noticeable. But I do like that it's growing. I think they regret being on every top 10 list for, like, best mid-sized city in the country to live in. Greenville's always on there. And I think they're regretting that. And I think that before that was a bragging point. Now they're like, everyone is moving here. Like, yeah, everyone looks at that list. They're like, oh, let's move there. That seems like a great place. And they're right. It is. It is a great place.
Did you start doing comedy there? Where'd you kind of get your start?
I went up in Spartanburg once before deciding I was going to move to DC where my sister lived to sleep on her couch and get a job and start doing open mics.
Okay.
So I didn't really start in Greenville or really when we talk about like doing it and starting to do it. I didn't really do that till DC.
Well, what was your first? Did they have an open mic in Spartanburg?
So they had an open mic poetry night.
And
So when I graduated, I stuck around. I graduated in 03, 20 years ago, which seems insane to even say. But I graduated in May of 03. And that's when I started, you know, I was working at the radio or the news station, news channel. And I just one night was like, you know what, I'm going to go do this open mic poetry night. I'm going to see if I can do stand up. And it was at a place called the Guitar Bar. And I called and they said, we don't run the poetry night. You can do whatever you want. You can tell Joe. For some reason, I thought the rules were so hardened at these things. You know what I mean? Yeah. When you don't know a community. So I was like, well, it's a poetry night. They probably will be angry if I tell jokes. But I got there and the poets, there were four poets and I brought everybody. I mean, I told so many friends I was going to go on stage. It's December of 03. The exams have just finished and no one has left for Christmas break yet. So many people showed up. I think it was a Monday night. So many people showed up to watch me do stand up and get drunk because, oh my God, our friend is going to go on stage. This is crazy. There's nothing else to do. Let's go watch this and drink beer. We were going to drink beer anyways. So the guy at the Guitar Bar said I could do whatever I wanted because I brought the entire audience. The poets, they were like, can you just go last? Because we've never had an audience and we don't want people to leave.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand anything. I mean, I didn't even know what I was going to even be doing up there. So I was like, yeah, whatever. I don't know what this is. But I must have brought like anywhere from 20 to 40 people. I always say that because, you know, our memories decide to exaggerate things. Like there were 100 people there.
Right.
But, you know, it definitely, it could have been 40, but it also could have been 20. And anyways, I went on at the end and I talked for like 30 minutes doing crowd work. It was all my friends in the audience. So I did like crowd work and I also told jokes that I thought were a bit, but I didn't know what I was doing at all.
So, okay. I think this is a very clear indication of what separates you from like most other people. Like most people, their first open mic, they're going to like look it up and not tell a soul and sign up and quietly be terrified, go up there and bomb their face off and not do stand up for another 6 months because they're traumatized. What was it that you had the confidence to bring all these people to your first time on stage and then you do crowd work for most of the time?
Yeah, I mean, not in defense of myself, sort of a devil's advocate. I think what gave me the confidence to do that was the fact that I invited, you know, the whole audience. So I was literally in front of people that it was easy for me to be in front of.
I see.
But I didn't really invite people thinking, yeah, I didn't mind showing off. I was always funny. I liked getting attention. Even on the soccer team, I would try to like make jokes and I didn't mind doing bits at parties and I didn't mind getting laughed at even if it was negatively. I just didn't mind performing. And so I just told people because I think I kind of thought, hey, they'll enjoy this because maybe I do well and they laugh, but also maybe we have something to laugh about because I am awful at this.
Yeah.
So it's like either way, it's entertainment.
Yeah.
To be even crazier, after that night, I was then going to visit my sister in D.C. on the high of going, oh, man, that was fun doing stand up. I get to D.C. I look up if there's anywhere for me to go try it up there. We find a place at a Best Western that's doing an open mic night. I show up there. My sister tells all of her friends, my brother's in town and he's going to try stand up. So again, I show up this time, I think with like 10 of my sister's friends.
Uh-huh.
And again, this place goes, you can't just come here and like get on stage. You have to like sign up. Everyone here was booked to do this show, but there's no one there. And I have 10 audience members and they know that if I leave, the audience leaves. And I'm not using this as collateral. I don't even know the power I currently have. I don't realize, they need me. I'm not realizing any of that. I'm just like, oh, in my head, I'm like, oh, we'll just watch. We'll just hang out and watch the show then. But they're like, all right, you can get up and do 5 minutes, which, you know, I'm like, oh, cool. Awesome. This will be fun. And so again, I did it. And then I decided after that, hey, I just found in the city paper all of these open mics. Maybe I should move to DC where my sister lives. So it's a comfortable transition. I have a place to stay. She can help me out until I get my feet on the ground. And here's all these open mics I can do. And so the very next thing I do, which is now going to be the third time I've been on stage, I book a farewell show in Spartanburg, South Carolina. And this time I do get about 120 people to show up. I charge $2 and I went on stage for an hour and 20 minutes. And it was miserable. Like I was doing okay in my brain then. Looking back, it was wildly unentertaining and so stupid and so self-serving. But that was my third time on stage. I arrogantly thought, oh, I'll just do like an hour long show because I'm leaving to go learn to do stand-up. Instead of leaving to go learn to do stand-up, I thought, I already know how to do it.
Did you feel you did an hour? Did you feel good on stage doing it, like in the moment?
Not really, because I and this is even more absurd. The night before is when me and my friend Rick sat down to write down some things that I could talk about on stage. And I look back on this and realize that my mentality is still, if you give me the two ingredients, I can figure out what to do with it. Like improv elements, basically.
Yeah,
where it's like, we sat on the couch and one of the early jokes he and I thought of was, I was always like, why don't homeless people stand outside of churches or banks? Why aren't those the two main places to stand as a homeless person? And there isn't a joke there. There is like an idea of like, hey, maybe that's a good idea. But I just went on stage with that. Like I would write that down and be like, all right, when I go on stage, I'll talk about that.
Yeah.
And this farewell show is when that, hey, I'll just talk about it, because there's now 120 people there. And because I know a lot of them and they are there to see a show, I'm now on stage, not really doing a show, but the crowd work now is not as cute because there's too many people and they don't all know each other. They're different friend groups.
Right, right.
So now I'm not getting away with, oh, I know the crowd. So there are things where I got laughs, but I think ultimately it was a lot of people sitting there being like, oh, he's leaving town to go do this. Well, I guess we'll see him back here in 4 weeks.
But what I find funny about that is like, you still stayed on stage for an hour, 20 minutes. Most people would have bailed if it wasn't going great after 15, you know, some, yeah. I mean, you had the people, but you gave an hour, you know,
there's an element of I'm willing to commit to things that I'm proud of.
Yeah.
And then there's an element of I am so good and arrogant that I'm not proud of. And those two things converged. And that's what kept me on that stage. I am worth your attention, even though I know I'm not worth your attention.
Right. Well, I think that's what probably makes you great at the whole deal. So when you went to DC, and you, like, did you, it seems like you already had your moment where you said, this is what I'm going to do. Did you have doubts that this was going to be your career at that point?
Or at that point, I didn't. I felt weird that I left my college town / kind of hometown, because some people from high school came to the show. I felt weird, like I left negatively, like, oh, I had a bad show and now I'm leaving to go do this thing. Like, that was my own interpretation of that experience, was, oh, maybe I'm an idiot, but also very excited because I'm about to move to a new city and it's a whole new adventure. And when I got to DC, my sister went out with me, Natalie, and we went to all of the open mics listed, all of the shows that you could go to that were like of a local level, not like the improv or anything, and watched the show, talked to who ran the show, signed up. And it's funny, the wait to get on all of those shows was about a month. So I signed up at all of them and I found the date that I would be coming back to get to perform. And I immediately signed up to start learning improv at Washington Improv Theater, started taking classes, and started going on stage a month later, and was sometimes okay funny, but bombing a lot also bombed enough to where I said to my sister, I think I got it wrong. I don't know that maybe I got lucky. The few times I was good, maybe it just worked. The crowd was good. And I don't know. I don't know why. And my sister gave me the best advice. She said, well, just give it 6 months before you give up. And in 6 months, if it's bad, then it's bad and you can stop doing it. And for whatever reason, that released me from the prison of expectations. All I knew was, hey, in 6 months, I can just not do this anymore if it's, but I'll just do it. And for whatever reason, that pressure of it needing to be good went away instantly. And I started doing a little bit better. I started becoming friends with the other comics. As you know, we feel like we found some underground community that you wouldn't have found in any other context, because the personalities in stand-up are so wildly different, but yet we're all crammed together and we realize, oh, we actually are friends, even though this person is wildly into Star Wars and I played college soccer and maybe we don't have anything in common, but we do have a lot in common because we both love stand-up. I started to become friends with a lot of the stand-ups and it just started to get better. I think DC was an incredible place to start stand-up because I think the talent level was really high. A lot of people that were starting were really funny. And so you just fought to keep up and try to be as good as, you know, everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that is killer advice from your sister. I remember the first time I went up, it was some coffee shop outdoor. So I really set myself up to fail there. And then I was so horrified by my bomb, I didn't go up on stage for like 6 months after that. So that, you know, whereas you were cranking for 6 months, I was doing nothing. So I love that advice. Speaking of your sister, you have a bunch of siblings, don't you?
I do. Yeah. Yeah. I'm one of seven kids. I have one full sister and then I have five younger half siblings. We all have a different mother, my older sister, and then the five youngest.
Got it. Okay. I'm one of 12. So I found that interesting. Yeah.
One of the Duggars over here.
I know. Yep. A lot of folks in that family. I'll tell you that much. My parents, you know, they had their hobbies. We'll say it like that. So, did you, what were you, were you a Catholic or, something like that?
Catholic.
Grew up Catholic.
Yeah.
Do you,
it's always Catholic.
It's always Catholic. Catholics with the kids. Did you do Catholic school or anything like that, or CCD?
Yeah.
Did
you? Yeah, did all that. Did Catholic school from kindergarten to eighth grade, then Episcopalian high school. And that's
when switched
I was
also over.
Doing CCD. Yeah, there wasn't at the time they were starting a Catholic high school, but it was so early on. We went to a more established like religious high school. I went there for 3 years. I failed the 10th grade. So I attended 10th grade. So I went 9th, 10th, 10th again. And then I transferred from there to a public school to do 11th and 12th grade.
Okay. So usually if you fail a grade, you go to a different high school. So nobody knows really you.
I know.
But you decided that.
You know what's.
Double down on the bomb, huh?
Yeah. So I truly think this. Also was a massive benefit to my psyche in some way, although I couldn't see it at the time, was that I failed English by 1 point. So all the other classes I passed, and at this particular private school, for me to get credit, I couldn't just go to a summer school or anything and get a better grade and then just move on to the 11th grade. I would have had to have gone to a approved boarding school for the summer that this school said, oh yeah, that they, you know, provide an equivalent education where we will give you the point. And my, you know, that we would have to pay for that. My dad worked at the post office. He was like, no, you're not, you're just repeating the 10th grade. So I went back to the 10th grade at this school. All my classes, I'm in the 11th grade, but for English, I have to repeat. But overall, my status is that I'm still in the 10th grade. And so the first day of school, all the grades are broken up in a different location in the school to have like assembly.
Yeah.
And I walk in to the 10th grade.
It's summertime in Wisconsin, and whatever the weather, it will impact you and your plans.
Should I water the garden? Will our event be rained out? Count on your local Civic Media radio station for in-depth details and the most up-to-date forecast.
Temperatures are rising into the mid and upper 70s under sunny skies.
It's your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
Are you a veteran who needs assistance? Do you know a veteran who needs help? The Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs is here for Wisconsin veterans, their families, and their survivors. We can help connect veterans with services such as medical care, financial and legal assistance, housing, mental health services, substance use treatment, and more. For more information, please visit wisvets.com. That's wisvets.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
ABC News, I'm Chuck